The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Boyle Sports. Now with same day withdrawals to your Visa debit card.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oh, guess who's wandered into studio? He's limping. He's cut. He's got muck on him. He's wearing the same clothes he's been wearing for months, looks like. It's Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent.
Can you apply some context to that, please, Joe?
just another Wednesday in Dan McDonald's life.
Yeah, no, it's good to see you.
There was a time when Dan was showering regularly, having days off. That was a long time ago. That was before Sunday Times news story broke.
For Paddy's Day.
A chain of events in motion, Dan. And look at you now, a shell of a man.
Yeah.
Radio listeners, you wouldn't like to see him right now.
Well, no, actually, it's a good weight loss tactic, you know?
Yeah.
just you forget to eat.
Dan, you've just munched a crunchy literally during news.
Frank Feehan style. That's dinner, as it's otherwise known.
Feehan style? Yeah, I saw that.
That was the thing yesterday. He was munching away on a crunchy and then he got up and left the room, which was a big story for the political world. Well, it wasn't really. It was just like, this is what happens all the time. Got a great insight into the life of the political core over the last month or so. In parts, you'd be jealous. In others, you would not be jealous.
See, I was well aware of all this. I started off in here on the lunchtime show with Eamon Keane way back when, and had to often in my duties either monitor leaders' questions or sit through Oireachtas committees.
Right.
On like almost a daily basis.
You know the gig, so.
So I was very aware of the tedium. I was very aware of procedure.
Tedium, yeah.
Very good, yeah. Nice. Procedure and private sessions, public sessions. And just how inane so much of it is.
But that hasn't been the case already during these 3 weeks.
No,
we've got the best stuff.
There's been box office.
We've got some of the premium Oireachtas committee action. But that Oireachtas TV channel now, I'm going to be scrolling that for repeats. You know,
I've sat through the grim stuff.
It's a box set. There's a box set in that.
Speaking of Frank Feehan eating his chocolate bar, how much snacking tended to go on? I didn't see much during those Oireachtas committees.
I didn't even think, I mean, us plebs in the gallery were allowed to even bring in tea or drink. Because there were so many adjournments. Every time it was an adjournment, you'd go upstairs, then you'd get a cup of tea, and then I'd have gone back in, and you'd just be sort of, you know, wolfing it down or whatever.
A crunchy is a loud snack.
Yeah, exactly. It's not one that's conducive to. I couldn't just sort of munch away in a quietly here because it just wouldn't be subtle. Whereas more of a dairy milk or a Turkish delight or something, you could sort of manage that. Like
even
so add a caramel base, you'd be grand.
Caramel based, yeah.
Yeah.
Even the crunchy wrapper has a certain thinness and crispness to it.
Yeah,
that would be.
It was an inefficient choice, it must be said.
But Feehan didn't care. This is my time now.
Feehan was like. And then Ferguson slapped him down, and he got up and he left. But this was premium Oireachtas committee.
Jesus, Dan, this was pay per view.
And the protagonists as well were actually quite willing to chat outside as well. I mean,
to interrupt. Could be a chance for City. No, tackled. Yes. Okay. So I wanted to ask actually if that was true. Talk to us about the interaction between the politicians and the journalists of these committees, because I did hear on the day of the Delaney Donald Conway FAI appearance. Then at the halftime break, to use football parlance, some of the TDs and senators came out and almost sounded out the football journalists, you lot, who were sitting there in the corner, as if to say, how are we doing? Seems to be going quite well. And the response was fairly lukewarm. And hence, in the second half, we saw just a touch of grandstanding to really let John Delaney know what they thought of things. Did it happen that way?
Not quite, but I mean, to say that there might have been conversations with a view to getting an opinion on how it was going, I think that would be true.
Oh my God, you even talk like a politician.
There would have been
that just happened by osmosis.
There would have been a negative response given back. But I think it would have been, I mean, they're obviously aware, I think, of like social media and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. In there, those people, they have this thing.
Sure. No rocket. Ruth Coppinger doing a running commentary on Twitter.
I think it was being pointed out.
What a goal.
Aguero.
Oh, what a goal. Manchester City 4, Spurs 2. Sorry to interrupt.
He likes that end of the pitch.
He really does. 60 minutes on the clock, effectively, 59 to be exact. Manchester City 4, Spurs 2. City take control of the tie. And we just saw the finish, didn't see much of the build-up, but Aguero, if you're watching on TV, it's where City are shooting right to left, and Aguero's on the far side of the goal, and he drills it into the net. We'll see it now. Looked like an acute angle. Lloris is kind of shaking his head and muttering. If you're just tuning in, it's been the most insane game, certainly the most insane first half. It went basically as follows. 4 minutes gone, as Dan, you watched that goal and you can update us in a second. 4 minutes gone, Sterling, and then Son scored two in about 3 minutes, 7 minutes and 10 minutes Son scored. Then on 11 minutes, about a minute and a half after Son's second, Bernardo Silva scored. That made it 2-2 on the night. Then Sterling scored on 21 minutes to make it 3-2 on the night. And now Aguero has scored. Talk to us, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, City played the ball out from a defensive position to De Bruyne. And I think it was De Bruyne who sort of controlled the ball well. And yeah, I mean, it was one of those situations where the players were drawn towards De Bruyne. But Aguero sort of made a clever move out to the right side. He stayed clearly onside. And yeah, collected the ball and drilled it in. It was actually, you know, basically two direct passes forward.
Yeah.
And Aguero sticks it away, but clever from, I'm pretty sure it was De Bruyne in the build-up who was pivotal to the whole thing.
So you got the sense the politicians were aware that there was a big viewership, they were keeping an eye on social media and maybe reacting accordingly at times.
The key point that was being made, and I think it's fair to say that it would have been said to them at halftime, that there's other members of the FEI...
We're just calling a halftime now, are we?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was seven halftime. There was other members of the FEI delegation, and I think they were aware. I think I've read it reported elsewhere that four or five of them got together at lunch and maybe were conscious that it wasn't necessarily going that well. And I think obviously when it switched to Eddie Murray and to other members of the delegation, that's when it began to go badly. I mean, their defensiveness probably worked in terms of Donal Conway handling stuff in the early morning, but I think when it moved to Murray. And it is really, like, since then, I think, you know, the trigger point here was the initial story. So, I mean, that's the trigger point, and that's where the credit has to go. But in the context of the politicking and the maybe public opinion, I think that that Dáil hearing there, or that Oireachtas hearing there, and the afternoon of that, with John Delaney sitting there while other people effectively took the bullets, and I know he was acting under legal advice, and that's fine, but it didn't help the other people that were there. I think that's a pretty fair comment.
Yeah.
And I think that subsequent to that, things have turned. But, I mean, yesterday for me was probably the most hectic day of them all. As much as... Wednesday was significant. The FEI were there, and there was a sort of a theatre of the whole FEI delegation being there. I mean, in years to come, we will say that Ruud Doctor was there, and we will wonder why, you know, for something that was dealing with matters of this nature, and Fran Gavin for that matter. But yesterday, just with the, all of a sudden now, you're talking about, you know, you're referring to breaches of company law. You're stating that as a matter of fact. You can, there's headlines today about possible sanctions that go with that, and it's moved it to a whole new level. And all of a sudden now, you're talking about ODCE. You're talking about reviews that have a pretty wide scale. You're talking about the entire board announcing an intention to step down, and you're talking about something that has started from a significant story and an injunction to stop a story, but something that was still an event in isolation that has managed to shine a light on a broader topic. And now people are scrambling to have governance reviews to reform. And to me, and I wrote about it this morning, the piece, that like this is also a great opportunity as well as that, as it's a great crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably the biggest crisis that you face when you consider the nature of where it could go and the nature of the headlines and the complete overhaul. You go through previous ones, it might involve a couple of characters here and there, but this has gone back to like the split with the IFA territory, you know, in terms of the scale of it and the gravity of it. So, but within that comes opportunity, and there is a chance to reform a structure that hasn't served football well over a long period of time. So, I mean, it's disastrous publicity, and for individuals involved, it's been pretty damaging. But in terms of the broader opportunity for the game here, it might be a bit of short-term pain for long-term gain. And I think that would be my description. And you can joke about, oh, it's a hectic month and there's a lot going on. And I think everyone, you know, involved in it to some degree is a bit flustered and a bit fatigued to a degree. But longer term, we could have a better structure in this country, and this could end up accelerating that in a way that we may not have just imagined a month ago, and what could have happened, and all this stuff about succession plans and Mick McCarthy and all this. I mean, it's this all, you know, I mean, like football topics have sort of not been on the radar. It's this, but this is big, and it will be big.
Well, I agree regarding the opportunity, because generally with institutions like this, the biggest barrier to reaching a version of best practice is that there are so many inherited traditions and frustrations and structures and ways of doing things. But this crisis is so seismic that the entire board are disappearing, and you can almost, on this now blank canvas, imprint some level of best practice. You can look at what the best football countries in the world are doing and model yourselves on those countries. You don't get the blank canvas opportunity virtually ever.
No. There's complexities and long-serving individuals and stuff you have to deal with. Now, there's still a road to travel, you know, before crafting this vision of this brighter future. And as I said, there's going to be difficulties, I think, in the next while. And
well, thankfully, there's a hell of an FAI board there to oversee this new dawn.
Well, I mean,
that was a big issue yesterday for a lot of the representatives.
Yeah, there's eight of them left now, and I mean, I think they need seven. To get a quorum, they need seven of them, you know, to be present at sort of certain meetings and stuff like that, and you know, conference calls and stuff like that might necessarily cut it. But I mean, there's a governance review group being set up tomorrow with a couple from the FAI and a couple from Sport. Well, I say tomorrow, it could be confirmed tomorrow, we'll see, this week, with a couple from FAI and a couple from Sport Ireland. I mean, there's still work to do, like to set up an EGM that can actually effectively lead to an EGM that changes the structure, the voting structure, the method and the process to which you must go through to become a board member. So, I mean, you have to see if that reform group gives you the results that you want. Mm-hmm. But I think it's clear yesterday from the conversations and the tone of the comments from Sport Ireland, and from even from Shane Ross, who belatedly arrived into this affair, like an 80-90-minute sub to some degree, that... I don't think people... This is the chance now where there's as much as interference to a point is frowned upon for FIFA and UEFA reasons, I think as much as can be applied will be applied to ensure that the board going forward is a more representative group of different skill sets and backgrounds, as opposed to being a series of people who've all come through a similar long service route. I'm not saying there's no role for any of these people.
No, sure.
I'm saying that the balance has been wrong, and that balance can be addressed.
I presume, given the news that the entire board is gone, John, there's no conceivable way John Delaney will survive this.
I mean, there's obviously a process ongoing, you know, there. And I mean, John Tracy said today, and I mean, it's been quoted widely today, that he's not a part of the FAI as far as they're concerned. And it's also been, you know, Kieran Mulvey, the chair of Sport Ireland yesterday, he said he couldn't technically say, you know, what the situation was, but to him it was an assumption, it was a form of gardening leave, and he has stepped aside from his duties. I don't think there's a plan. I think business is going on in Abbottstown at the moment, and I don't think there would be an expectation, certainly around certain staff, that John Delaney will be back. But at the same time, I mean, he is currently... Mm-hmm. And he's on the payroll, and he's on the books of the FAI as such. So, there's obviously discussions and meetings taking place about radical reforms here, and we know that he's not a part of those discussions, having previously been the driving force of the association. So, I think people can take from that what they will. You know, I don't expect personally to see John Delaney back FAI business.
Does this story slow down a little bit now after the drama of the last 2 weeks? I agree with you, by the way. I do think the Oireachtas Committee here in the FAI's appearance, John Delaney's non-appearance in some respects, swayed public opinion. There was an element, I think, of people, probably John Delaney supporters in the first place, but even people who I got the sense were lukewarm or unsure of the situation, who read the 100,000 euro loan story, and okay, have an appreciation that corporate governance is important, but also think it's kind of nonsense, really. And so, well,
take your point, yeah.
You know, they needed 100 grand. Okay, it was a weird choice for him to give it to them, but he gave it to them. And it's kind of a benign gesture, you could argue. Are we getting a bit upset about something that's not that big? I think those same people were really curious as to why he went for a super injunction on a bank holiday.
Yeah, but you're right, not all of them were.
So I think that was where we were, that, okay, this is strange. I'm not sure if it's a resigning offence or a sackable offence, but this is very strange. Let the man explain it himself. Might have been an arguable
I
stance.
Had conversations around the Georgia game where a lot of people, that they had a tunnel vision on the story, and that they were just wondering about the 100,000 and that's it, and what it was for and why it was needed. rather than a broader, what does this say?
Totally. And I think then once the Oireachtas Committee happened and Delaney said he was precluded from answering questions on the loan, that was disappointing. But then when it emerged, he was also precluded from answering questions relating to his previous role as CEO for the previous 14 years. That, I feel, is the exact moment. And when others around him were almost being... Yeah. Like lamps and slides.
That is
the moment where I think public opinion said something is really not right here, rotten here.
Yeah, and the inability of the delegation, as I say, to answer questions which should be routine. And I know that they weren't necessarily covered, but I keep going back to the point about this, that this hearing was not arranged because of the 100,000 euro loan.
This
was a long-standing review of FEI governance. And what we saw was people in officer positions or in jobs that weren't able to answer questions. And the discomfort when certain subject matter was raised by some pointed questions.
Do you know when I thought there's real trouble here? Okay, one, when Delaney didn't answer anything, I thought this is just terrible, terrible decision.
Initially, some people went out at lunchtime and thought that they were bossing it.
I still thought, okay, he's not going to be, you know, backed into a very difficult position, and he won't be under the spotlight. But I just thought it wouldn't play well the next day in terms of headlines. It would still be Delaney says nothing. But honestly, one of the moments where I thought there is actually something seriously wrong here, this is going to affect everyone, not just Delaney, is when Fergus O'Dowd very, very clearly and straightforwardly said to Dougal Conway, I think it was three times, maybe four, but certainly three, he said, just to allay fears, to just get everything back on track here, would you not agree to a forensic audit? Let's just have a look at everything.
Yeah.
And Donald Conway, he knew this was a yes or no answer, and he kind of mumbled something, and Fergus O'Dowd went away again and said, look, that's not really the question. A forensic audit. We just do a forensic audit. Look, you know, Chairman, we're doing Grant Thornton, we're doing this. No, last time, a forensic audit. And I think Delaney, from memory, like took a drink of water. It was just uncomfortable. Mm. And he said, oh, no. And that was a moment where I thought, the whole board are in trouble now.
Yeah, and there was also some very, Padraig O'Cady, the senator, asked some very specific questions as well. And even the moment when he just went round and asked them to identify every member of the delegation, which established clearly that Delaney had brought his own legal representation. Again, he's entitled to do that.
Absolutely.
But that sort of highlighted that there was a slight difference. This was the FEI delegation, and Donald Conway but had to admit that that individual was there on behalf of John Delaney, and the FEI, while I had previously sought advice, didn't have someone here. It was just a little moment, but it just highlighted that there's a couple of aspects to this, you know, and what we saw from Wednesday onwards is that you can tell, even on Monday, like on Wednesday you had a team photo, effectively, of the FBI walking in together. And on Monday, you have John Delaney walking out on his own, and then the other board members leaving in time. That there's a split, effectively, you know, that did exist, that has come about as a process, as a part of this process.
Yeah.
And that's hugely significant when, over time, the board have been a unanimous voice on a lot of decisions and a lot of statements.
A question I wanted to ask you, and actually, by the way, brief aside, I thought, Llorente has scored for Spurs.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Llorente has scored for Spurs. They are back in control of this tie. 73 minutes on the clock. It's 4-4 on aggregate. Spurs have away goals. Wow. We completely missed this. 4-4 on aggregate, 4-3 on the night to Manchester City. We're seeing Pochettino in conversation with Vertonghen. Pep has turned around, he's walking back towards his seat. Raheem Sterling's over to the referee as if to say, are you going to have a look at that? And the referee's nodding as if to say, oh, this could be a handball from Llorente. This could be a handball. It was a corner. Vincent Kompany misses the header and it does hit Llorente's hand.
Does it?
Yeah. Now, it's not in an unnatural position at all. Or is it Ander Vereld? No, it's Llorente, yeah. Oh, actually, no. Does it hit Kyle Walker's hand first? Pep Guardiola's pointing towards his hand.
It looks like it might hit his hand and then it'll come down off his thigh and sort of go in, but we'll have to sort of catch the replay on it. I assume they're going to go to VAR.
So there's a corner here. We're seeing shots of the referee. There's a corner and Vincent Kompany goes up to head the ball, misses it, and it falls and it hits both, I think it's Kyle Walker, but it hits both Walker's hand and Llorente's hand. I'm not sure in which order. So kind of like and then it ends up going into the net.
We're going to have a look. I mean,
we're getting a signal from the referee for VAR.
With the Manchester United precedent, PSG here, mm-hmm. you know, and the use of the hand in VAR situation is
ominous.
Ominous, yeah.
I think that would be disallowed. I don't think it's a deliberate handball. I think he was surprised Vincent Kompany missed the header. We're seeing it again now. Does it actually miss his arm? It might miss Llorente's hand on the way to hitting, is it Kyle Walker's hand? Maybe it's an OG.
Like this is, I wasn't 100% convinced initially it strikes the hand.
I now think it's Llorente's knee and then it glances off the Manchester City player's hand. I think it's his knee, Dan. I think it's Llorente's knee.
It's more higher up. It's more of a, he's basically off the side of his arse, basically. You know what I mean?
That's his hip there, isn't it?
It's definitely.
Oh, this could be given now.
I think that's a goal.
Llorente scored with his hip, everyone, not his hand.
Yeah.
God, VAR is brilliant. Where's Kenny Cunningham? It's two nights in a row. It's been brilliant. Can we get Kenny Cunningham up on the phone there to tell him he's wrong again about VAR? Not really. We'll be here all night.
No.
Okay, referee's looking at this still. This is a long time.
Ah, it's a goal. It's a goal.
Right, come on, ref. That's a good angle. You have to give that. The Champions League semi-final place at stake.
Goal. Yeah, it's a goal.
Wow.
Now we've got a good bit of extra time coming here as well.
No, we don't, because there's no away goals.
No, I mean added time.
Oh, added
time. The time that it's taken here. So this
extra time.
No, I mean, I don't mean extra time. I'm not a complete clown, Joe. I'm not that new to the whole football two-legged business, but thanks for the tutorial on that, though. I really appreciate
nothing.
That. Yeah. I appreciate that. It's clear.
I just don't think you can call it added time, extra time. I'm not accepting that. Not in knockout football. Yeah, okay. Sorry, Dan. Yeah. You're wrong.
Yeah, okay. Get down to the Oireachtas with you, son. Yeah.
Sorry. Very last point on all of this, and then we'll go to Dermot Corrigan. I was going to say, one, I thought Donal Conway, in very, very difficult circumstances, actually performed very well. I mean, not all his answers were good.
No, I mean,
because they couldn't be.
The transcript will be pulled up at various times.
Yes, but I just thought his delivery was really impressive. He was there for 8 hours and he was doing all the heavy lifting. But secondly, I just wanted to ask you very briefly, to what extent is Rayo Walsh damaged by the shambolic, to use Shane Ross's words yesterday, by this shambolic FAI appearance? To what extent is Rayo Walsh, even unfair as it might be, just by visually being part of that shambles? To what extent is she almost now unlikely or precluded from running for CEO in a realistic way?
I don't think you can say precluded, because I think she is going to be, she's a part of a lot of stuff that's going on at the moment. But
optics here.
Yeah, talking optics, and there obviously was, I mean, Rhea Walsh, for the last couple of years, her job title did relate to, I mean, governance was a part of it, you know, corporate affairs. So I think association with the old regime is going to be a problem for people when it comes to the new regime.
I didn't think last Wednesday it would be an issue for her, but just in light of the entire board going.
Yeah, no, I would. I mean, we'll have to see, but I would. I just think that whatever appointment is made longer term to lead the way, I just think an association with what's gone before is not going to be a help to someone when it comes to that process.
Yeah,
doesn't mean they don't have a role to play,
sure.
But the central role, I wouldn't be so sure.
Yeah, okay. We'll take a short break. So City on the verge of going out, Spurs on the verge of going through. There are still 13 minutes to be played. We'll check in with Dermot Corrigan, by the way, on Barcelona.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Now, welcome back. So, we still have Manchester City 4, Spurs 3, 82 minutes on the clock. It's 4-4 in aggregate. Spurs are going through on away goals as things stand, but it's precarious, obviously. Liverpool, still 2-0 up last check. Oh, God, 3-1.
3-1, yeah.
Sorry, excuse
me. Firmino was just scored to make it 3-1, but Porto obviously got one in the interim.
Militao scored in 69 minutes to make it 2-1 on the night after Salah and Mane had scored. And then Firmino in 77 minutes has scored a third for Liverpool. So it's 5-1 in aggregate. They're navigating relatively calm waters there. 10 minutes to go at the Etihad. All updates will come as soon as they happen. By the way, we have a special show at the Aviva Stadium on the 2nd of May. It's a Liverpool special, given events. We'll be at the Havelock area, and there'll be Champions League semi-finals to preview as well, in the company of special guest Steve McManaman is going to be the special guest. And the only way to enjoy it is to be there on the night. offtheball.com/events. So that's our Liverpool special with Steve McManaman on May 2nd, with thanks to Boyle Sports. Meanwhile, last night, too easy for Barcelona.
Supera el Barça. Ahí va Leo Messi, dispara. Para Coutinho, Coutinho que percute en el centro, va a buscar el disparo. Oh. ¡Golazo de Felipe Coutinho!
Now we've got Dermot Corrigan with us. Dermot, long time no talk. How you doing?
Hey Joe, how's it going?
Yeah, very well. So Messi and Barcelona go through, and no surprise really, I think. I was flicking through your colleague Sid Lowe's piece, actually, and he made a point I've been making over the last few weeks as we try and almost preview these games and talk about these games, and it's really about Messi. Bear with me, not getting the credit he deserves. Messi's victims are many, said Sid, and one of them is him. He's a victim of his own ability, of over a decade of making the extraordinary routine, normalizing genius. He said there are 880 words in this article, but maybe two are enough. Lionel and Messi. For years, there's been a severe shortage of superlatives. All of those adjectives inadequate, but this was just another one of those nights. Sometimes the simplest judgment is the best. Messi is just better. And goes on at another point to say, 597 goals for Barcelona. 597. It is rather ridiculous and rather repetitive. I wonder how many times you've seen Messi live in your lifetime at this stage?
I don't know, 50, something like that. I don't know, a good bit. It does become kind of strange because, like Sid would know probably better than me, but just trying to find things to write about and trying to describe it, like you just kind of assume that he's going to do something special. Even at the Camp Nou, sometimes when he's on the bench, and Barca rest him very rarely for games, but when they do leave him out, as soon as he comes out to warm up or something, just the whole stadium kind of rises, and just he has this kind of presence about him that everybody expects him to do it. It's a lot of pressure that he's under, and he deals with it really, really well. And again, last night, Barca are not the team that they were when Xavi was there and Iniesta was there and Guardiola was the manager. They're a very different team. A lot of pieces have kind of fallen away, and Messi's had to step up as everybody has left. As Guardiola left, the coach is not as good. Xavi's gone. The midfield's not as good. Iniesta left at the end of last season. Messi's now the captain. So there's a huge amount of responsibility on him. He's still scoring as many goals as ever, and he's setting up goals. He's running the game. It is just, it's amazing what he's doing, really.
And, you know, that could be a very frustrating dynamic for him. You know, it's a really tough thing when you're a player and you've been part of a great team and the best players drift away as, you know, Father Time catches up in them. And suddenly you look around and get really frustrated, and this used to be better, and that used to be better, and this whole thing used to be better. That could drive somebody insane. Whereas actually, to his credit, he seems to embrace the fact that he's going to have to carry this team more than he ever had to previously.
Yeah, like he's such an enigma kind of as a character. You know, it's really hard to know what's going on in his head, but he's never really come out and criticised the transfer policy of the board. You get a feeling that sometimes he feels some of his teammates are not quite up to the quality that he would like. You can see his frustration, and even more you can see in them. Even somebody like Coutinho, who you know, is brilliant in the Premier League and has been very good for Brazil and is a top player, really. Sometimes you feel that Coutinho goes into his shell a bit because he has to live up to the standards that Messi demands from people. Not that Messi would go around banging on his door telling him he has to do it, but just to give him a look or wouldn't look at him or whatever to make him feel that way. But Messi gets on with the job. He's talking a lot more in public now. He has to do the after-game interviews. He doesn't say that much when he talks. His answers are generally pretty short. But even last night after the game, he was like, you know, we weren't great for the first 5 minutes. We were a bit nervous. We can't allow that to happen in the semi-finals again. So his demands on himself are really, really huge, and his demands on everybody else are pretty big, and he pulls them with him for sure.
Was Coutinho's celebration directed at the Manchester United away fans or at the entire stadium?
He hasn't come out and clarified it. I think it was at the people who've been criticising him in Barcelona so far this year, and there's been a lot of them. One theory was that it was towards the press area because some of the stuff that's been written about him, about that the club will be trying to sell him. Maybe it was towards the board, who, you know, some of the board have been briefing journalists saying that they'd take a hefty price for him, or just the fans who have been on his case a little bit recently. And he hasn't been so good. You know, there's been games where he's kind of, it's drifted past him. He's not been able to impose himself on the game. But last night the goal was really good. And I mean, it'll help him, I think. You know, as I was saying, maybe he went into his shell a little bit because things weren't going his way. And a goal like that on a stage like that, and even the personality that he showed in standing up for himself a bit, might help. And it's probably going to be Liverpool, his old team, next up. So that's going to be pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a fascinating game, isn't it? Those for opening 5 minutes in particular were pretty shocking from a Barcelona point of view. Manchester United cut them open several times. There was the Rashford chance, obviously. McTominay, if he'd had a reasonable first touch, would have even had a better chance. It was good football from United, but just the defensive shape of Barcelona. I mean, like, the back four was a zigzag mess. It was really awful. You know, I was kind of shocked with the curse that has been 11 sports. I don't see Barcelona as much. Is that routine?
No, not so much. Defensively, they've been pretty tight. Like, Piqué was caught out for that Rashford chance, and he's been really good so far this season. You know, he was very good at Old Trafford, and he's kind of become, he's got rid of the mistakes kind of out of his game. But there was a general nervousness about the team at the start of the game, as Messi had pointed out. There have been a couple of games, like, they conceded four goals recently against Villarreal, who are relegation candidates. They got hammered, or they got beaten by Real Betis at the Camp Nou back earlier on in the season, conceded four goals then as well. So they are prone to it. You know, Barca have always been, because they've so many, you know, attack-minded players in the team, the fullbacks push on, they're prone to giving up chances from teams. It's something they're really aware of, and the coach Valverde, it's maybe his biggest preoccupation is to be a bit more cautious, to not leave the gaps, to have more of a structure on the defence, and to have more protection from midfield. But they can be got at, and you know, Liverpool's front three of the teams who are left in the comp, well, Ajax, you know, are a crazy team to try to predict, but Liverpool could cause them problems. You know, it all will depend on, you know, if Messi shows up again or turns it on again, Barca will probably go through, but Liverpool will cause some problems over the two legs for sure, assuming Porto don't come back.
Yeah, I think we're in safe ground. Van Dijk has now just scored a fourth, so they should be okay. So it's a pity in a way. Spurs look like they're going to go through here. Now, City could score, obviously they still have injury time to do so, but it's a pity we're not going to get to see Barcelona against Manchester City in some respects. It'd be an intriguing game on various levels. You kind of make Barcelona or Liverpool favourites for the Champions League, maybe Barca by dint of Messi. It's going to be a fascinating two legs. You wouldn't be surprised either way. I just wanted to ask about De Gea. You know, I don't know how much Premier League football is watched over there, but if you're a Real Madrid fan, and you maybe watch the odd occasional big Barcelona game as well, and maybe you watch the World Cup where De Gea has a bit of a nightmare, he's still unbelievably highly regarded, I presume, in spite of bizarre mistakes like last night and some dodgy showings for Spain.
I think the World Cup really damaged him. Excuse me, that he was just so bad at the World Cup, and he doesn't seem to have come back from that. Even a couple of the games for Spain, a couple of the game against England in the Nations League, and the games that Spain have played since then, he hasn't looked that confident. He doesn't come off his line, you know, and Spain need a keeper who will come off his line and will sweep up behind them, dominate the area, come for crosses and stuff, and nobody doubts that De Gea is a really good shot stopper and maybe the best shot stopper around. Spain don't have a really serious number two to put pressure onto him, but it's definitely gone quiet. The idea that Madrid would break the bank to try to sign him, or that he'd be a big priority for Madrid, for Real Madrid this summer, looks very unlikely. They have Keylor Navas and Courtois there at the minute, and maybe one of them will leave, but De Gea's, his stock has fallen a lot, and last night just confirmed that, really.
Yeah, it was definitely the wrong occasion to make that mistake. And very finally, it seems like they're not content with Freddie de Jong. They're going to pick up Matthias de Ligt as well, Barcelona. That's the word.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a busy summer, because Barca already, in order to sign De Jong, they've pushed the boat out financially. They're going to have to try to move some players on and wheel and deal a bit in the summer. If they go for De Ligt as well, even more so. But they really want to get him, and he looks like a fantastic player. Even the bit of, like, scoring the goal last night and how he played against Madrid, and just, he looks the real deal because he's so young as well. So they will. It'd be great if they could get him, and it would make a lot of sense if they can do it. But it might mean that some of the English clubs maybe can sniff around some of the other Barca players, like Coutinho, that it could be a busy summer of ins and outs at Barca.
Dermot, super stuff. Thanks, Emil.
Cool. Cheers, Joe.
Dermot Corrigan there with the latest from Spain. Barcelona's win last night. Short break. 3 minutes of added time left. Man City have 3 minutes to score a goal or they are out of the Champions League.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Okay, deep breath, everyone. So we left you before the ad break and Manchester City needed a goal. They had 2 minutes to score a goal against Spurs or they were out of the Champions League. Then this happened.
Gundogan's shot. Took a ricochet that favoured Dele Alli and now Tottenham can play their way away. Although I don't think they're going to hold it for too long. Giving it away here to Aguero. Aguero with a chance. Sterling with a chance. Here's the moment!
Pandemonium. The stadium loses its mind. And Pep's running around.
But Aguero, composure. Sterling, oh,
what
finish.
What a pass from Aguero. And the finish from Sterling was just
brilliant.
Calmness personified. But then, what you don't want to happen happens. Oh, do we have the commentary? Okay, bloody hell, take it away.
I think it's the Aguero moment. When he gets onto the ball, is he offside? When he picks up the ball there, is he offside? Odshunay Chakir is listening to Massimiliano Irrati and it's been disallowed.
They've disallowed it?
It's been disallowed for an offside against Aguero.
Oh my God.
Oh my word.
Stephen Fletcher and Jermaine Genus. Darren Fletcher.
Stephen Fletcher is the ex-Sunderland striker Darren who went Fletcher, to Marseille
Darren
for a while.
Yeah. Darren Fletcher and Jermaine Genius, I think, echoing everybody's conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was a mistake from Christian Eriksen, come back facing his own goal.
Full time.
Yeah.
Spurs are through. Man City out. The quadruple is no more, Dan.
I haven't heard what the actual incident was. Eriksen was coming back facing his own goal and attempted a dreadful pass which hit Bernardo Silva and therefore released Aguero. And it was only on the replay that you saw that Aguero was basically in an offside position coming back, but Eriksen's made the biggest mistake of his life and got away with it. You know, like, he would have been slaughtered. You could see him after Sterling scored going, oh no, what have I done? And it didn't matter.
Spurs
not being Spursy.
Absolutely.
Man City are going to win the league now, aren't they? They're going to beat Spurs on Sunday.
They're going to beat Spurs 10-0 and
they're going to win every game, and Spurs have got a Champions, you know. So
this is extraordinary. Spurs against Ajax, Liverpool against Barcelona, Manchester City players bereft on the ground. Poch, the guy hugging Poch is in tears. Unbelievable finish. Spurs have beaten Man City. They're through.
Good to be back to football matters, Joe.
Yeah, we got to go. We're out of time. Busy show tomorrow. OTB AM, 7:45 in the morning. And Tom Dunn is up next. We'll leave it there.